Chapter 1. Carcassonne. Elias jolted awake, bolt upright, her eyes wide open. Fear fluttered in her chest, as a bird caught in a net struggles to be free. She pressed her hand against her ribs to still her beating heart. For a moment she was neither asleep nor awake, as if some part of her had been left behind in the dream. She felt she was floating, looking down on herself from a great height, like the stone gargoyles that grimaced at passers-by from the roof of the cathedral church at St. Nazarai. The room came back into focus. She was safe in her own bed, in the Chateau Comtal. Gradually her eyes became accustomed to the dark. She was safe from the thin, dark-eyed people who haunted her at night, their sharp fingers clawing and pulling at her. "They cannot reach me now." The language carved in the stones, more pictures than words, which meant nothing to her, all vanished like wisps of smoke in the autumn air. The fire, too, had faded, leaving only a memory in her mind. A premonition? Or a nightmare only? She had no way of knowing. She was afraid of knowing. Elias reached for the night curtains, which were hung around the bed, as if by touching something substantial she would feel less transparent and insubstantial herself. The worn cloth filled with the dust and familiar smells of the castle was reassuringly coarse between her fingers. Night after night, the same dream. All through her childhood, when she had woken in terror in the dark, her face white and wet with tears, her father had been at her bedside watching over her as if she was a son. As each candle burned down, another was lit. He whispered of his adventures in the Holy Land. He told her of the endless seas of the desert, the curve and sweep of the mosques, and the call to prayer of the Saracen faithful. He described the aromatic spices, the vivid colours and the peppery taste of the food, the terrible brilliance of the blood-red sun as it set over Jerusalem. For many years, in those hollow hours between dusk and dawn, as her sister lay sleeping beside her, her father had talked and talked, setting her demons to flight. He had not allowed the black cowls or the Catholic priests to come near with their superstitions and false symbols. His words had saved her. "Gillem," she whispered. Her husband was deeply asleep, his arms flung out, claiming ownership of most of the bed. His long dark hair, smelling of smoke and wine in the stables, was fanned across the pillow. Moonlight fell through the open window, the shutter pinned back to let the cool night air into the chamber. In the gathering light, Elias could see the shadow of rough growth on his chin. The chain Gillem wore around his neck shimmered and glinted as he shifted position in his sleep. Elias wanted him to wake and tell her that everything was all right, that she didn't have to be afraid anymore. But he did not stir, and it did not occur to her to wake him. Fearless in all other things, she was inexperienced in the ways of marriage and cautious with him still, so she contented herself with running her fingers down his smooth, tanned arms and across his shoulders, firm and broad from the hour spent practicing with sword and quantine for the joust. Elias could feel the life move beneath his skin even as he slept. And when she remembered how they had spent the early part of the night, she blushed, even though there was no one there to see. Elias was overwhelmed with the sensations Gillem aroused in her. She was delighted in the way her heart leapt when she caught unexpected sight of him, the way the ground shifted beneath her feet when he smiled at her. At the same time, she did not like the feeling of powerlessness. She feared love was making her weak, giddy. She did not doubt she loved Gillem, and yet she knew she was keeping a little bit of herself back. Elias sighed. All she could hope was that with time it would become easier. There was something in the quality of the light black fading to grey and the occasional hint of birdsong from the trees in the courtyard, which told her that dawn was not far away. She knew she wouldn't go back to sleep now. Elias slipped out between the curtains and tiptoed across to the wardrobe that stood in the far corner of the chamber. The flagstones were cold under her feet and the rush matting scratched her toes. She opened the lid, removed the lavender bag from the top of the pile and took out a plain dark green dress. Shivering a little, she stepped into it, threading her arms into the narrow sleeves. She pulled the material, slightly damp, over her undershift, then fastened the girdle tightly. Elias was 17 and had been married for 6 months, but she had not yet acquired the softness and sway of a woman. The dress hung shapelessly on her narrow frame as if it didn't belong to her. Steadying herself with her hand on the table, she pushed her feet into soft leather slippers and took her favourite red cloak from the back of the chair. Its edges and hems were embroidered with an intricate blue and green pattern of squares and diamonds, interspersed with tiny yellow flowers, which she had designed for herself for her wedding day. It had taken her weeks and weeks to sew. All through November and December she had worked at it, her fingers growing sore and stiff with cold as she hurried to have it finished in time. Elias turned her attention to her pannier, which stood on the floor beside the wardrobe. She checked her pouch and purse were there, together with the strips of cloth for wrapping plants and roots, and her tools for digging and cutting. Finally, she fixed her cloak firmly at her neck with a ribbon, slipped her knife into its sheath at her waist, pulled her hood up over her head to cover her long unbraided hair, then quietly crept across the chamber and out into the deserted corridor. The door closed with a thud behind her.